Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 640, and listen to our pyro. It sounds like the pyro at the end of AEW Revolution, baby.
Yeah.
With me to talk about this fun time is Chris Calamino. What is up, good sir?
Not the AEW ring was didn't go up.
Oh my gosh!
Oh man! How awful! Like there's, you know,
yeah.
There are a few things more embarrassing than minor explosions. When you expect big ones.
Yeah, like, I know that Tony Khan really tried to... he tried to blame Kenny Omega for being incompetent.
That was just such bad carny... That was such bad carny bullshit.
But it is also one of those things. It's just like, yes, there, and also in response to his comments, no, I did not expect anyone to actually die during this, you moron.
No one ever has died.
Yeah.
It's something of an illusion unto itself of mostly smoke, but there wasn't any smoke, and it looked terrible. I mean, how do they think that looked good? Like, how do they think that would have been enough to create enough of the illusion of fire and smoke?
Those sparklers on top of the ring post, like, it wasn't even Kane pyro level pyro. Like, it looked like sparklers. Like,
yeah,
handheld sparklers. Like, it looked terrible. Like, I don't know how they went through that walkthrough and went, yeah, man, that's really gonna nail this look. And
I mean, I know neither of us really are, you know, Japanese deathmatch connoisseurs, but you've seen some of the videos of that were passed around before and after the show of what the explosion is supposed to look like, right?
Well, from my Stranglemania days.
Okay, maybe you remember.
I am more than aware of the endings of these things, and like you said, like, it 90% of it is smoke.
Yeah,
they basically just make it pretend look like a big explosion, but it's all smoke and no flame essentially, and yeah, whatever. I don't know if they had an inside person that, you know, was in the Japanese death matches that kind of had extra insight into that, but they failed them if they sought any advice in how to do it. Because, yeah, everything would have been fine with more smoke. Like, I remember the first time I saw the Dudleys in the WWE, and their pyro went off, and Nationwide Arena did not have the right ventilation at the time.
Oh, yeah, there were times, yeah.
That was smokier than what happened at Revolution. I mean, yeah, just like regular WWE pyro has been more smoke-filled than that. Like, yeah, it was a really bad look to... what I would say was an otherwise fairly enjoyable evening.
Yeah. Until the last two matches, I was finding it pretty rough to get through. I think, once again, it was a lot, very long show, and almost every match felt like it went too long. Like, every time, every match is just like, this just feels too long. I don't, which I guess is more of a common problem throughout wrestling. But yeah, nah, I like I said, I really enjoyed the last two. I guess again, Omega and Moxley had a really, really great version of this kind of match, and it's a shame that it ended the way it did. And, I mean, the person, of course, I feel the most sympathy for is one Mr. Eddie Kingston.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that one's got to be tough to take on the chin. Because I mean, you can't stop people from bagging on that situation. Like,
no.
I got it that it's not Eddie's fault, but he's the guy really taking the bullet in that situation, and it just comes off looking really, really bad on him.
Yeah, I guess you really can or shouldn't blame them for it. I mean, I, once again, I've never been in that situation before. I don't know, like, is there something you should feel? I mean, do you still feel? I mean, should they have been clued in on when they felt no heat at all from any kind of flames or explosion, or they weren't induced coughing by so much smoke that, you know, something went wrong there and took to call an audible? But no, I mean, this is completely on AEW staff and management. Poor Eddie Kingston had to act like he was knocked unconscious by this
concussive force.
however you want. by whatever the hell that was supposed to be, really, really bad. Moxley trying to. There's that video went around of Moxley trying to make a joke about it, while medical staff is still tending to Eddie Kingston. So that kind of made it worse. I understand. Once again, I mean, Moxley, Omega, and Kingston have every reason to be absolutely furious about how this went down. We will see how they recover. At a certain point, I guess maybe you just don't mention it again.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic idea. You mentioned that as little as you have to. Because again, like it marred an otherwise fine match. At a minimum, if not just, yeah. I woke up to this headline and I saw the video and I was in tears, like almost immediately.
Because you were
talking about the length of it. I was starting to wonder, since the WWE has been starting their pay-per-views at 7 o'clock, they're like, man, we're out of this thing by, like, 9:30 most of the time now.
Oh, it's been beautiful. Oh, my
God. And this one...
God, they have to keep up that is up. But
this one was more traditional pay-per-view, which most people start at 8 o'clock rather than 7. I mean, there's 1 hour... So even if you just go the same length as the WWE, you're still talking 10:30. And yeah, I was asleep during the Darby Allin and Sting matches. That's when I hit my limit. I had had a pretty long day up to that point. So I did not make it through that match or the death match. So I got to see that news before ever seeing the match, which was quite a funny way to watch that process.
I got to experience it live, and then the utter hilarious aftermath on Twitter, which people with their comments, their memes, their edits. Oh, so there's some pretty damn, some pretty hilarious edits going around. it was a banner night for people who watch this stuff ironically. For the lulz, as they say.
Oh man, yeah. Because what was it? I think Bully Ray was the one that just tweeted out. Everyone just remembers the end or something like that.
The finish is all anyone ever remembers. You know what? That is historically incredibly true. Yeah, no, it was not. It just was not a. It was not a good night for them. They really they overreached with it and then under they overreached and then underperformed.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it is kind of funny that it's covering up something else that I guess going into Revolution, I guess I was under the impression that there was only one mystery person coming to AEW. When did the person getting in the face of... What are they calling it? The face of AEW ladder match?
The face of the Revolution.
Face match. The... Yeah, okay. So many damn gimmicks.
Over the whole show, yeah.
But I guess I did not realize that the person entering that match and the Hall of Fame worthy signing were two different persons. Did I miss some obvious clues?
As of at least last Wednesday, there was a graphic for the ladder match that included a mystery person.
Okay, I guess I just assumed that the mystery signing was the person that was going to be in that match, though. Like, I guess, like I said, I didn't realize it was two separate people. I guess it's good that I don't think I really need to see Christian in a ladder match. Christian Cage in a ladder match.
No, I mean, I wouldn't doubt that eventually it'll come to pass. But no, no, no. It was. You know, they made a huge, huge promise. I don't know if they necessarily delivered that way, but I think by the time we got to Sunday night, the way out there speculation ended, and people had come to the conclusion it was either going to be Christian or Kurt Angle. I think.
Oh.
As your top suspects, once you realize that, you know, it's not. Of course, it's not going to be Brock Lesnar. Of course, it's not going to be John Cena.
Oh.
CM Punk may have been an outside possibility, but he did personally deny it, and that kind of that. Maybe was the only one that kind of kept prevalent, but
oh yeah,
but they made a really big deal out of signing Christian, and you know what? I guess fair play to them. You know, maybe at some point, maybe learn to temper these announcements, to not encourage outrageous speculation.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones where I like Christian a lot, but I don't know how much, like, I guess this is all about him, and his, you know, like, he's, I guess, another guy that didn't really get to end his career on his terms, and I do understand why he went outside of the WWE, because most of his success there has been tied to Edge.
Yeah.
You know, he obviously had a very successful run in TNA. What, was he their champion twice?
At least two or three times.
Yeah. So, I don't know if he'll be champion over in AEW necessarily, but he's definitely going to have... he probably is going to enjoy the creative control maybe a little bit more over in AEW than he would get to control over in the WWE portion of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He mentioned that in his interview today on Renee Young's podcast. That, yeah, this is something new to him to have so much to say over the creative, and also in some ways, I don't know if he's officially being considered a producer / agent, you know, backstage, but you know, and you know, unofficially, maybe someone who has more backstage responsibilities along with wrestling full time. Which that is, I think, that is the deal. I mean, that is what, you know, money obviously, but the two, you know, he wants to be a weekly player. He doesn't want to do the occasional match, that whatever bone WWE throw him, and he knows he, you know, they've literally made jokes about it during the Edge and Christian show on the WWE Network. You know, it's common knowledge Vince sees nothing in Christian.
Oh yeah, and yeah, for that reason, I don't really blame him for going out there. I was very happy that it was not Kurt Angle. I'm like, I don't. Like, that's like wanting to see Ric Flair wrestle again. Like, why are you doing this to this person? Like, he was great. I get it. I do not want to see him on my screen ever again. Like, in a wrestling capacity.
No. It was plainly obvious in the last couple of years. Particularly when they really, you know, pushed his farewell tour, and every match got worse than the one before it. It was just like, he's done. I mean, it's every inch of his body is done. Christian had lingering concussion issues, but, you know, got medically cleared, and saying that, you know, that, you know, his body is healed up, so there's no reason to believe he can't, you know, be what he once was, as opposed to Kurt Angle, who's it's just over.
Oh yeah,
the man just has too many, there's just too many injuries there.
And yeah, Christian should be able to deliver some good matches still. But yeah, I like him a lot, but. I don't even feel like there's a dream match there, you know what I mean, for him? Like, do I really care if him and Kenny Omega go at it? Like, does that give Kenny Omega anything that he doesn't have already? You know what I mean? Or even Jon Moxley. Like, I'm not saying that I wouldn't end up enjoying these matches either, but I'm not excited about the prospect either. Like, it's just, okay. Like, he's over there. Like, I appreciated his run. I definitely like him more than Vince McMahon does. You know? Like, I definitely feel like he was more worthy of getting a push in the WWE than Vince does. So, but yeah, at 47, he's another one of these guys. It's just like, I guess I'd prefer that type of a person in a part-time role rather than a weekly role. Just because more times than not, they've been, you know, out there for that long. But these cases are pretty interesting in and of the fact that, what has it been, 7 years, I believe?
Yes, 7 years. That's a long damn time.
Yeah.
And I've expressed my concerns about, you know, Edge, you know, it was his durability and how he looked like he was moving the last couple of times he's been on TV. I mean, I mean, there's something to the idea that, yes, you've gone that long, the lingering injuries go away, but your body also adjusts to normal life. go ahead.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, they always talk about, I feel like almost any video will talk about how you get, your body gets calloused to all the bumps. Like, I feel like any training video, or, you know, behind the scenes video has had something like that mentioned. And yeah, well, your body has not been getting calloused for 7 years. I would imagine, yeah, so, or however long the time period is exactly.
Yeah, to start back up at 47 years old, you know, your body might not exactly, you know, respond well to the repetition of bumps. But we shall see. He looks good. He's confident in himself. So, you know,
and
let's see what he can produce.
Yeah, and it's a multi-year deal. So it's not like this is just a I would imagine if you say something like that, obviously it's at least two, but hey, why not try to get to 50? But man, that's still just, yeah, being a person in a body that age, I don't think I want to put this through a pounding any heavier than I do already, and I know that he's going to be doing that, so good on him. I would not want to do that. Because it's probably going to be painful. But yeah, and the other, I guess, the face of the Revolution match, we got All Ego Ethan Page just, I guess, full on jumping over from Impact Wrestling over to AEW. Is he going to get any more time than some of these other faces that are not getting time in AEW?
Yeah, AEW is definitely stretching itself incredibly thin. I know they're adding more and more shows, so which I guess they need. I mean, they're so again, they've got the new Dark Elevation that's starting next week. And there's still another, I think, another hour-long show on TNT that's supposed to start within the next few months as well. So, yeah, at least they'll have TV time for people. even if two of those shows are on YouTube as of this moment, and I guess just by the nature of being on YouTube, they do not feel like priority shows to watch.
No,
nor is Dark in any way presented as anything priority to watch. But it's again, at least they have places to put these people.
yeah, I guess. Yeah, good for them. But yeah, it is one of those things. It's going to be interesting to see how far he gets. In the scope of things. I mean, that guy, he's kind of been slowly moving up the ranks, and I will always say a contract in AEW is probably the best, at a minimum, second best in the industry. At a minimum. So, good on him for getting over there. It'll be interesting to see what he does as a singles guy. Was there anything else at the pay-per-view that stood out to you that is worth covering? You know, I mean, it has been a minute since this is aired. I guess it was Sunday. It is the second most recent thing, huh?
Yeah. No, it is the second most recent thing. It was Sunday. I mean, honestly, I don't know if we.
Yeah, I'm looking through this stuff, and I mean, the tag team gauntlet match was fine, you know, but it did chew up a lot of time. Hikaru Shida.
That's where I think the show went wrong. Either you do that and cut two matches, basically, or you cut that and do two other matches. I mean, it just that. I mean, other than the main event and the street fight, my favorite part of the whole show was the final stretch with Jungle Boy and Phoenix. That was tremendous. I certainly want to see those two again. In an actual match.
That whole match went too long, but the ending of it conversely from the main event, this was saved by the ending of its match.
Yes.
So that was a lot of fun. I would not mind a Pac and Phoenix versus a Jurassic Express match down the road here somewhere.
I would not mind that either, Karate. Yes.
You know, Hikaru Shida and Ryo Mizunami kind of was what you would have expected, honestly. Yeah.
I mean, there was some good stuff in there, but we had no reason to care. I mean, it just, I've mentioned it the last time I talked about AEW. It boggles my mind that Britt Baker isn't AEW Women's Champion by now. It makes no sense that we're continuing this Sheeta run with, you know, heatless opponents. I don't get it at all.
I think that she's good, but she has had nothing to play off of. Like,
yeah, no. I think she can be very, very good. I think that she could be very effective as a babyface, but
yeah,
you know, she does not have the right heel. She hasn't had any.
No.
Right heels to work with.
I guess even now that Miro is doing probably what Miro should be doing, I don't know, man. I'm having a hard time getting into him.
Nah, there's so little left with him. He has come into this company with no passion at all, and it's obvious he's just there for a paycheck. And you know, it looks like they might be setting up for him to break off from Kip Sabian, which will help. But still, unless he can find himself again, I don't know if I necessarily see him at the top of the card.
Yeah, he needs more investment from himself to get to that stage. I enjoyed the Hangman Page and Matt Hardy match. Somehow Matt Hardy pulled out a half-decent match.
Yeah.
Without a bunch of gimmicks.
Yeah, no. That was fine. It was a good little storyline to keep Hangman Page in the mix. Hangman absolutely needs to be moved up going forward. You know, he has absolute potential to be the guy in AEW, and you can't keep him mired in lower mid-card stuff for too long until people. Or else you define him down to that level, and it's hard to get him back from it.
Well, and he's just been down at that spot for almost the whole time in AEW at this point. Like, he went from wrestling Jericho in that first match to tag team champions to, you know, whatever this phase is. And, yeah, you need to get the ship straightened out here at some point. And this would be, as good a time as any to, go. And it does seem like they've been, moving a little more in that direction. Even though Paige has had drinks in his hand when they've been talking to him, he at least has not been acting like a complete alcoholic at this point.
Yeah.
So yeah. I do think that they're kind of moving him more to just like, hey, I know how to relax, kind of a drinking phase, which is fine. And I don't know, like I have no idea what that stipulation is really going to mean moving forward.
I mean, I guess you could do some funny skits with Matt Hardy being broke, or which is why I'm glad they didn't saddle Hangman Page with that. You know, playing up that he's broke and, you know, there's and needs, you know, Matt Hardy or what have you. Yeah, I'm glad they just played. If they don't do anything really with it, I'm fine with that too.
yeah. Hardy is a better guy to run with that gimmick. Anything that keeps him out of a ring, I won't argue with. And I guess we didn't really talk. We kind of talked about the ladder match, but we didn't really talk about the fact that Scorpio Sky was the winner.
Yeah, no. they've had so many starts and stops with that guy. I don't even know anymore. It was a nice moment for him. I don't know if he's beating Darby Allin, although Darby has done next to nothing as TNT champion, so you could conceivably get it off of him and still but without hurting him too much. Because it's just the whole presentation with him coming riding on a sport, riding on a skateboard while holding a championship. It's kind of a weird image.
Yeah, I don't completely mind it, but it almost seems to be too much of the identity. You know, you almost feel like it's one of those, he doesn't seem invested enough in the wrestling part of things. So yeah, but I mean, he's kind of had his own problem where he's been booked in this feud with Sting and Team Taz for 3 months now. Like, I'm trying to, like, it's been a while at this point.
Yeah, no, the feud's been going on a while, you know, and it's been fine. The street fight that, you know, was one of the better cinematic matches we've had in a while, certainly. I enjoyed it. It was, you know, a good way to use Sting, and, you know, babyfaces won. Darby got to do a crazy stunt bump. Yeah, which you know, he likes it, so, you know, good for him. Yeah, so, but we'll see moving forward if he becomes a more active TNT champion, or if he's just going to lose the belt to Scorpio Sky on tomorrow night.
Yeah, that one, I guess, will be kind of interesting. And I do think that actually covers all that show.
Yeah.
So, fair enough. I guess we move to Monday Night Raw, where we quickly and yet again decisively got The Miz out of the championship picture.
Yes, indeed we did. No, it was a weird call to run with this match again. I didn't quite, but once again, we got Bobby Lashley's new entrance, which is a pretty epic entrance. You know, Bobby beat Miz decisively again. Miz got a little more offensively in this match than the match the previous week, but not by all that much. Yeah, no, Lashley got the big win. No, it was an interesting way to just kick off the show. They definitely kicked off the show. I mean, the beginning of the show for about the first hour and a half or so felt pretty hot, and it was some kind of inverse of the formula, you know, type situation that felt like it worked out. Of course, it, you know, the show went off a cliff by the end, by the last half certainly. But no, yeah. You know, going from, you know, from that match to, you know, what they did with Drew and Sheamus was very good. You know, Drew, you know, calling Drew the presumptive next challenger is an interesting turn of phrase.
Oh. Yeah, that's one that raises eyebrows. It's usually not the announcers misspeaking.
No, there's something. Feels like something's brewing, but I don't know exactly what. I've got some, we're talking about this, the ideas, but it's something, it just feels like, yeah, something's up. It's not just going to be, it just doesn't feel like it's going to be, at least the very least, going to be a smooth ride to a Drew versus Bobby match at WrestleMania, and that's it. It feels like Drew McIntyre may have some mountains to climb to get there at the very least.
Yeah, and that'll be kind of interesting, I guess, to see develop. Just because they really haven't made any declarations really one way or the other. I mean, we talked about the Brock Lesnar option last week, but we shall see, you know,
Yeah, I
like
mean, I feel like that's
there's
still
no
in
reason
play.
to go back over that
Yeah,
situation though
no, there
either.
really isn't. No. Until they announce what the match is actually going to be, I mean, that is still I, that idea is still possible, yes. But for now, Drew not finished with Sheamus. They had another knockdown, drag-out fight. those two just beat the living hell out of each other. And it's fun to watch.
There are some matchups in the WWE where you can really tell they're laying in the leather, and those two guys are on that list for sure-sies. And I guess I thought the ending was a little bit lame that he was clearly protecting himself by keeping his head in between the stairs, but they're saying that that's what gave him the concussion. So I guess I'll work with him on this one. Like
Yeah.
you're trying to be safe, but also sell a storyline. Like I'll let this one slide, I
Yeah,
suppose.
no. I mean, you gotta start selling stuff like this as as dangerous, because then we get situations like someone gets run over with a truck, and they're only out for 2 weeks.
this is a very valid point. So that definitely has the feelings of a feud extender, and I'm not sure if it'll make it to Fastlane or not,
Yeah,
but
that's an interesting thought. I mean, if they're gonna really, since that's still, it's already less than 2 weeks away, if they're gonna have Drew and Sheamus face each other at Fastlane, you could always hold it off till later. You could do things like, you could do it the way that New Japan handles their 2 night Wrestle Kingdom, by having matches the first night, leading the matches the second night, and people wrestling twice, which WWE did not do last year, but that idea could certainly be in play.
I mean, especially, and we had talked about it a little bit before starting the show, they mixed in some of the NXT stars last year to the WrestleMania card. Or was it just Rhea Ripley?
It was just Rhea Ripley.
Oh, for some reason, I was thinking there's more than just that.
Yeah, no. It ended up being just Rhea Ripley, and this year NXT's getting their own two-night spectacular, apparently, earlier in the week.
Yeah,
So there will
well,
be
and
no
I guess I
NXT
was
involvement
gonna.
in WrestleMania itself.
Yeah, my thought was you're not gonna really have any NXT people fill in, like, and I guess that's still kind of. I would be interested if the WWE gets, you know, some of those matches like you're talking about, where person A needs to win to take on person C. On the second night.
Yeah, that's certainly happened. And because the thing with bringing in Lesnar is, I think if that's what's going to happen, you want to guarantee a showdown between Lesnar and Lashley. That's the
Oh.
big match between the two badass MMA heavyweights that's never happened before, that can finally happen. You'd have that on the night first night, and then the winner faced Drew on the second night, and that would be absolutely fine. Or more than fine.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you'd want Brock to be the one who to only wrestle once, which I guess he would be if he didn't lose, if he lost to Lashley. So yeah.
So I'm trying to think of, since you were talking about the first half of the show being good, I guess we have more indications here in between these matches we've already talked about that Shane McMahon and Braun Strowman will be in a match one of those two nights.
Yeah, that's definitely looking like it's being. Well, that's obviously being set up. It's looking like it's going to happen. I'm still very concerned by what I've been seeing from Shane. He does not look like he's there physically. He doesn't look like he's there mentally. Something. I know he was there. They're saying, and there were reports out almost immediately that, that's exactly how that segment was supposed to go. Shane's fine, but it's like, those reports came out really quickly, like they're trying to hide something. Like, I mean, I know Shane was trying to make Braun look stupid. That is the storyline, but he wasn't supposed to make himself look stupid.
It's not an engaging way to. If that was intentional, it wasn't a very engaging way of doing that.
No, it was not at all. It was really, really poorly done. So once again, I still find myself concerned for Shane McMahon's health. But if we put that aside and just and take the word that that was planned, it went terribly awry. I don't know why you would do a Braun Strowman Shane McMahon match. Where Shane is the heel. Because the whole match needs to be Braun throwing Shane around and Shane just getting,
pummeled.
Whatever little
offense he can.
Offense he can after Braun, does the famous Braun Strowman run himself into the post?
Yeah, well, that one's patented by him and Nia Jax. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So it's a weird match to have the giant guy who's about half the age of his opponent playing babyface and babyface in peril against Shane.
Yeah, that's kind of the other awkward part. Everyone in, not that Shane hasn't been a heel, but for the most part, he's been the only McMahon able to be a babyface.
Yeah.
And traditionally has been more over than not, I would say. And it's kind of a weird situation for everyone to be in. Like, Braun Strowman was just a heel. So why is he being moved to babyface is weird.
Braun's been so I don't know, my miscast isn't the word, but it's just been so all over the place. Really, since he lost the title at SummerSlam and got sent over to Raw, it's Braun's characterization has been an absolute mess.
It's just been, I feel bad for him, and this stuff just, it's not, again, it's just not engaging. Like, I don't know why you think that was a good way to try and make Braun look stupid, because it didn't really make him look stupid.
Why was Shane pausing for so long? I don't understand it. My Twitter feed was filled with people legitimately asking, is Shane having a stroke?
I guess I didn't think that, but I was also just going, why is he pausing? Like, it wasn't like one of those, you always try to, the old gimmick of talking slow to someone who's not smart. Like, it wasn't even that. It was like completely stopping talking.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. Yeah. And it's not like Shane doesn't know how to do this part, because it's literally what he did against the Big Show 20 years ago. it's really bad. Whether it was went his way as planned or not, it's really, really terrible. And I don't really have high hopes for this build-up going forward, or the match, if Shane McMahon is not in good shape.
I will not be caring about that match whenever it comes on the WrestleMania card.
Yeah.
It is that easy.
Then I guess it's just they have hit the wall with this Randy Orton storyline.
Oh.
3 weeks in a row of this black goo coming out of his mouth, with nothing else really happening.
Yeah.
Alexa Bliss cost him another match that didn't mean anything to begin with. So what?
Yeah, it's like you said, it's hit a wall. Like, I found it interesting for a while, and I was just like, oh, okay, I can understand getting Alexa in there as a surrogate for a little while. But at this point, it's like, what are you guys waiting on to bring him back?
I guess
Like,
until after Fastlane,
hey,
which
yeah.
is just once again these pay-per-views, they stick in the middle in the middle of the build to WrestleMania. It just are more often than not just slow things down and make things worse. It's not a it doesn't feel like a doesn't feel like we're on the Fastlane. I mean, maybe some
Yeah.
years they had better ideas of what to go from point A to point B to C and D, et cetera. But this year, they obviously don't. And it's definitely having this pay-per-view is a this extra pay-per-view is an absolute detriment.
Oh, yeah, like it's, yeah, it's not
And then
good.
they, you know, it's not. And then they announced that there's going to be two championship matches on Raw next week. Why? Fastlane doesn't even have Fastlane only has two matches announced. There's no undercard to this thing. I don't even know if Bobby Lashley is going to wrestle on this show because he's got no one to wrestle. I don't know if they're going to keep Drew and Sheamus out of action for another 2 weeks or more. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's definitely no one, like, at least that's on TV, there isn't anyone that I would believe challenging Bobby Lashley outside of Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, none, but Drew's got unfinished business with Sheamus, so that's not happening.
Yeah. So I don't know who you fit in there, and yeah. I really don't know who you'd put in that situation, honestly, that would have some type, some level of credibility for Lashley to beat, but also not hurt anyone. Like, him wrestling John Morrison next week really doesn't do him any good.
Did they announce that, or is that something that's
No,
just
no, no,
internal
no.
to
I'm
us?
just, I guess I was thinking former champion, you can talk up the credentials. The
Yeah.
loss wouldn't really mean anything for him. Like, I was trying to think of people who fit that criteria, and John
Yeah.
Morrison was the name that popped into my head.
Yeah, no, I then if that I'm presuming that, Lashley's just not gonna have a match on this show. Because there's
Oh.
just no one to do it unless they, I guess they could have done Miz again, but they blew that off last night too. So, yeah, no, it's a weird, once again, it feels more like a roadblock than a fast lane.
Yeah. I agree. They need to rename this pay-per-view this year. Why is Reginald continuing to be a roadblock for the women's division? Like,
That I have no idea. Oh my! At least if he stays with Nia and Shayna for a little while. Well, no, because they're facing Bianca and Sasha anyway. So yeah, no. He's still gonna circle the orbit of that match too. Fuck! Oh, this is awful. We didn't even talk about the Raw Women's Division yet. Oh, Jesus! Oh.
yeah, I mean that matchup, like that was one where I was so lost why they didn't save this one for Fastlane for some reason,
I don't
like.
know. They have to have some kind of idea for why they want Sasha and Bianca to team again when they failed to get because they failed to turn Sasha heel or really have big heat between them, even if they're not going to turn Sasha full heel. It's a bad thing. And then, you know, poor Naomi and Lana. And you know what? I'll even say I feel bad for Lana in this regard, because she really has put her all into this thing and this story with her and Shayna and Nia. And I mean, her and Naomi even got matching outfits for the occasion.
Like, they, if you're saying, hey, just take the shit gimmick and run with it, they're trying to run with it, and they're still getting shit on, so.
Yeah, there was no reason to shit on them like that, you know. It's beyond parody at this point, you know, them not, okay, not Lana, but them not, you know, really letting Naomi run with the ball ever since, you know, last year's Royal Rumble. It's just absolute madness, and it's a damn shame.
Well, yeah. Or even have her just carry that tag team. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean,
it would just be useful for the women's tag division if a team was shown as competent.
Yeah, no. There are absolutely no competent teams at this point. No, it's not good at all. You know, Shayna and Nia, over the last few weeks, they've actually been gelling together better than they had been previously.
Yes.
So that's good. I'm assuming we're going to get some kind of a multi-team match at WrestleMania out of it, because there are still so many teams and makeshift teams you can do. Hopefully, maybe you can keep Lana and Naomi in the mix that way too. But it just feels like they really don't know what they're doing. And then you got that awful segment with Charlotte backstage with Mandy and Dana. Mandy and Dana are talking about, you know, the singles Raw Asuka and the Raw Women's Championship. I thought you were a tag team. Why are you in this situation?
Well, and they didn't win as a team, so I'm not quite sure why they think they're going to win as singles wrestlers.
I mean, it just looked, that segment just looked awful. I mean, Charlotte almost literally bigfooting these two women. It's just like, and then there was that, I don't know if you saw or it's a big thing today, is the Peyton Royce promo on Raw Talk about her wasted potential and how she's being overlooked and underappreciated. It's like, shut up, you're Peyton Royce. You've shown nothing in the last 6 months. Even in any spots you've been given.
Yeah, she has done herself no favors. Like, I was wondering why her name was being mentioned a lot, and then eventually I saw that she had a promo on Raw Talk. And
maybe it would be better if everyone wasn't cutting the whiny I deserve a chance promo, but everyone is cutting a whiny I deserve a chance promo, and it's just like, shut up.
Well, yeah, that is one thing that it does not help that anyone that seemed to have gotten a bump on there has gotten one from that exact promo. Whether it's been, I mean, I feel like Big E had something like that. Cesaro recently did something like that. I'm sure there are other people that I'm not thinking of offhand.
Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed some promos on these shows, but someone really nailed it. Nailed it on Twitter earlier tonight, where it was like, whenever someone has a 60-second promo on Raw Talkers Talking Smack, this is what they see, and it's Dusty Rhodes' Hard Times promo.
I mean, I do feel like Peyton Royce has been put in enough situations and that nothing has really clicked for her.
Yeah, I guess that's becoming the problem. It's like this bottom half of the women's division, there's just at a certain point, it's not the lack of opportunity. There is a lack of talent depth once you get past the top half of the women's divisions in both Raw and SmackDown. And, of course, Triple H is hoarding so many good women who could break up this monotony.
He took one back, and she is being put in a tag team, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like NXT is getting their own women's tag team championships now.
And it's going to be better organized than the main roster's division.
They're at least going to let Triple H have that going forward, even after he retreats from Wednesday nights. it's like there's still a limiting. You know, there's still a low ceiling, I think, on what NXT can be. You know. People watch enough wrestling when they watch Raw and SmackDown. I don't know how big AEW is even going to get, you know, moving forward. With no NXT competition. And there are just so many women who could be, like Shotzi Blackheart could be a huge star if she's on a show that people that over a million people watch.
Yeah, there are just a lot of women in NXT that could really at least ease the crunch on the main roster. Because like you said, like I sometimes I forget about how many people have failed on the main roster. There are some people like, I don't understand why, like, at least on SmackDown, per se, why Carmella is being sidelined again after, like, I understand that she had a losing attempt at the championship, but I feel like she's good enough that she can be a player for that division.
Yeah, no, she has improved, she improved in the ring, and she's always been at least an above average personality in the women's division. One of the non-horsewomen women who has gotten any kind of traction at all.
Yeah, so she's the only one offhand that I'm thinking of. Yeah, that because Lacey Evans got more than enough chances.
Oh yeah, and apparently, if she had stayed without child, there's a very good chance our greatest fears would have come true.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it would have been for the title, yes.
That would have been just a disaster if she would have had that.
Yeah.
Like, that's one where it's just like, oh, come on, Vince. Like, you have such a type. This, you're just such a sucker right now. Like, I mean, I haven't said that in a while because there's been such a variety of looks for the women's division. But, yeah, late. You know, at least Charlotte Flair can back it up if you're going to kind of complain about Vince preferring blondes. Yeah, Lacey is not that. Like, she has a great list of credentials. That does not make you a good professional wrestler.
No, it does not.
So that's kind of her that's her main problem. I guess I'm glad that happened for her then, because that saved all of us from, I can't believe that saved us from things being even worse in the women's division. Like, that's the kind of, wow, man. And we were just saying how much of a disaster it is right now. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I and I guess I really don't have anything more to say on them. Like I feel bad, like, because I feel like Mandy Rose, for whatever reason, like, I don't feel like she had a spot that was really, really bad that she blew herself up on. Like, I don't know, like, to me, her roster run has been so weird. She was so heavily pushed, and then the whole Otis thing happened, and it has been a wasteland ever since that.
Yeah, the Otis storyline should have launched her in the stratosphere along with Otis. It really should have been more, a lot more than it was. And, you know, I know some things happened. They were both out at the same time, which let people believe that, you know, there was a COVID issue over the summer. I don't know if that affected things, but yeah, you'd think that there's been so many people who you would think are Vince McMahon's type, male and female, that, you know, like, say, like a Mandy Rose or a Braun Strowman, who he should know how to push them to the fucking moon, but they don't. They reach a ceiling, and he gives up for a while. Then he starts thinking, well, why aren't we pushing these people? And then we do it again. And then he gets bored after a while. And the cycle continues.
Yeah, it's a wacky, wacky world out there on Raw. I'm trying to think if there's anything else big to talk about, but I think that about does it, honestly.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. So I will talk about the Belltime beer of the show. While I was getting some dinner on Friday, I stopped in at Pretentious Barrel House, which is one of the dedicated sour breweries here in Columbus. And this one was unremitting. It is a malt beverage with natural flavors, and it also happened to have Chardonnay wine grapes in it. So, and it was also, has a little bit of Cabernet Sauvignon in it. 7.4% alcohol. A little bit high for a sour. And, I don't know, it's pretty tasty. Like, I'm not really much of a white wine drinker. But this has two parts white wine and one part red wine grapes in it, and it makes for an interesting combo. It does kind of taste a little bit more like a wine than like a sour. So yeah, interesting one. But these guys make some really tasty beers, and I do think that they're another all over Ohio delivery brewery at this point. So get them if you happen to be in that listening range. And that's at DeFrango 11's opinion. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars helps out. You can also do what you can if you listen to us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you happen to download this fine podcast. Have a good night.
Later.